Hello everyone, Becky Anderson here to let you know that my crowdfunding campaign for Wreck This Deck is live and there's a link in the show notes. Wreck This Deck is a solo journaling and deck crafting game. In this game, you play a deck runner, that's a DIY demonologist, trapping demons in altered playing cards and keeping meticulous notes of your work in your journal. At the end, you should have brilliant microfiction written in your journal and an artifact deck of playing cards that you have altered yourself. I'm funding for a printed zine, new art and layout, and I've revised the original version of the game with more content, such as sample demon profiles and fortune-telling spreads. There's a link to the campaign in the show notes, as I said, and thank you very much for listening. Now, on to the show.
Welcome to Black Armada Tales, an actual play podcast. My name is Josh Fox. My pronouns are he and him. I am your host for tonight's game of Last Fleet. And my players are...
I'm Becky Anderson. I am playing Lieutenant Emily Loris, callsign Hellcat. That's the Ares playbook. And our pronouns are she, her.
My name's Ed Tomlinson. My pronouns are he, him. I'll be playing Dr. Tobias Roy, the Scorpio. And his pronouns are he, him, too.
G'day, folks. I'm Nick Bate. I am playing Taurus. The Taurus is called Captain Sam Buckley, Commander of the Hecate. Or is it Commander Sam Buckley, Captain of the Hecate? One or the other.
Also, I thought we agreed it was Captain Bucko.
Captain Bucko, yeah.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sue Elliott. I'll be playing the Gemini, Sonia Vega, and our pronouns are she, her.
Super. I've already said we're playing Last Fleet, but I'll just point out that I wrote it also. All right. Well, so I feel like you were going to approach the fleet and say something about quarantine. And I think we sort of said we were going to hand wave that a bit.
Well, how are you hand waving it?
Like, I feel like if every time anybody is in contact with anything Corex related, they're immediately thrown into quarantine, that's potentially quite boring.
True, but like, the doctor did touch it, didn't he?
Only, I was very surreptitious about that.
Oh, were you? I didn't see you licking it.
No, because you're being busy being beaten up by one of them, I think. I didn't lick it as such.
Well, you kind of did.
It was more of a light peck.
Tickling with your tongue?
Well, maybe what we could do is say there is a quarantine procedure. It's relatively light and is designed to check that.
Is it like the one where they blast you with?
Yeah, like the decontamination in Enterprise, where they're just basically having a sauna for 20 minutes and then they go about their day.
A weirdly sexy interlude in an otherwise sexless show.
Yeah, where there's, you know, kind of various creams involved. And...
yeah, let's do that. Sounds great.
I was going to say maybe there's a brief period in which you are confined to, in effect, a cell, while they do like blood tests, which they know that the blood tests don't work, because if they did, it would be really easy to detect Corax agents.
Yeah, if anyone's going to find that blood test, it's going to be me.
But it's part of the process, and it's now, you know, it's now set in stone that this is what you do. So you're there for like a few hours, and in that time, you might have conversations while in the cell, and that's kind of fun. If somebody wants to urgently talk to you, like if the captain wants to come and talk to you, they're going to have to talk to you from the other side of a cell wall. So with that in mind, what we're going to do, we're going to have like a debrief scene where everyone's in a room together, except presumably Vega, because why would Vega be there? Or, Captain, do you want to come and sit on the other side of a cell wall and talk to Loris about why she's such a screw-up?
I think maybe the second one. Or I can see reasons why Vega would be there, right? Because she's supposed to be covering this mission. Not for this conversation, because, yeah, that seems about right. When you come in, indicating that you've been on board the ship and...
Let's have an intimate conversation between... intimate and yet strangely not at all intimate.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right next door, right?
An intimate conversation with four of us while we're all going through decontamination in our pants.
I mean, we are both in our pants, so that's...
Probably paper pants as well.
Sorry, just to be clear, I'm just going to storm down there as soon as I realise you're back and you've... I don't know if you're there, Vega. I don't think Sam currently gives a shit if you are or not. He's about to demand some answers.
Okay. Just real quick, Nick, as this is your ship, what are the decontamination cells? Just visually, what they look like?
Yeah, so I think the decontamination cells are, they're in the hangar bay, and so they're not the brig or anything like that. They were something that was that's been constructed, like an isolated box that's been constructed inside the hangar bay, so that anyone coming back on a ship can essentially, you know, dock their airlock with the inside pod. And I think that because they were hastily put together with whatever we could find, I don't think they're solid. I think they're like tent material, you know, like canvassy kind of structure. But it's that stuff that you always see in movies about outbreaks and all the rest of it, where it's not see-through, but like it's not clear, but you can see people moving around inside, and it's probably lit with some kind of antiseptic blue.
And so do you go into that area, or are you like sitting on either side of this slightly blurry wall?
I think I'm outside it. I'm not going in. There's probably like a few spots where there is see-through.
This is a bit like confessional, this.
What's confessional? Is that, you mean like a confessional?
Like, yeah, Catholic thing.
Yeah, a little bit. Not least because somebody sinned.
Right, excellent. So you're both in a room, a weird room.
Well, no, I think I'm not in a room. Like, I think these two are in a weird room.
Oh, you're literally outside the tent completely.
Yeah, I'm just in the hangar. And I think there's probably a look on my face as I've walked through the hangar fast to get to the decontamination that means that the flight crew and the engineers who are, they've got out of my way.
I think there is a crate that's positioned next to one of these slightly more see-through windows so that people can have exactly this sort of conversation, and which you may sit on if you wish to.
Yep. I think I do.
It's called the Hellcat crate. Yeah. That's his nickname.
Yeah, I think I do. I'm going to walk over and I'm going to sit down at that crate. Are you there already, Loris, or are you?
Yeah, I think yeah. So. I think that I will have been anticipating.
Right. You're waiting for this conversation.
I know that I'm in trouble.
And remind me the name of the CAG.
Gabriel Catan, Hurricane.
Okay, great. So I'll pull up a seat on the crate and I'll probably be a bit stiff-backed. And I think I'll just say, what the hell, Hellcat? I was very clear.
I'm going to glance over at Dr. Roy, and then I'm going to say, I don't have any excuses, Captain.
Well, what happened?
When we got there, there was no sign of Korax infection at all in the ship, and we were hailed by the captain. I thought I'd fucked up. I thought that I had seen something that wasn't there and blasted those doors shut and trapped a load of people in a ship that was now just floating in space. So we went in to see if how badly I'd screwed up and whether we could jump them back out into the fleet.
Jesus, Loris, we all looked at that camera footage from your flight. We've all seen it. You didn't...
But when I got there, there was nothing. There was nothing at all. No sign. Nothing.
Right, which in my book qualifies as weird.
She's going to flick another glance at Roy and then say...
I just raised my eyebrow and say, with all due respect, Captain, you weren't there. It's very easy to make judgments from the comfort of your leather chair.
No, I take full responsibility, Captain. You're right. It was weird.
Are either of you hurt?
I can't even remember, actually. No, Captain.
But there was a fight, right? This is me asking. There was a fight, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and were weapons discharged?
Right. So we made it back out onto the shuttle, and we managed to disengage the shuttle, and that's when we realised that the Korax infection was all over their jump drives. So I took out their jump drives. But in order to attempt to preserve the fuel pods, I shot through the bridge.
I think Sam is just looking at Hellcat through this plastic for a moment.
I'm not sure that Hellcat's going to meet his gaze. I think she might be looking at the floor.
And I think Sam's going to say again, Hellcat.
In order to preserve the fuel pods, I shot out their engines through the bridge. Did I use threading the needle for that move? I think I did, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's because you
yes.
Naturally, the whole thing would just have exploded. It would have destroyed the whole ship.
Yeah. So then I'll say, so the engines are disabled and the fuel pod is salvageable.
And the bridge is destroyed.
Yes, Captain.
The vessel.
You were hailed.
The vessel was
ill. Dr. Roy, I'm speaking with Hellcat at the moment.
Yes, we were hailed, Captain.
Okay, I think Sam's just going to stare at Hellcat for another minute longer. And then he's going to say, damn it, Hellcat, you promised me. And he's going to stand up and he'll say, Catan will be down for your full report in a matter of minutes. And he's just going to turn and walk off.
Wow. Like, I feel like I should have called for some moves during that scene, to be honest. But anyway,
I feel like that's his breaking point action, surely.
I don't know if it is yet.
Has he alienated you?
Well, it depends. Yeah, I guess that's the question.
I don't know. I feel pretty guilty. So, yes, but not because I feel like he was... So, I feel now very consumed with guilt on a number of competing fronts.
That doesn't sound like you're alienated. That sounds like you're guilty.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I am guilty.
I think I could have cranked that over to publicly meltdown, but I didn't. So, I think it's still there. We've still got it in the bank.
Right.
I say, if it's any consolation, I don't think you did anything wrong, and the captain's got his knickers in a twist. He wasn't there. Everything you did was the right move.
I made a promise, and I broke it. And I took out a bridge for the people. So once I'm out of here, I'm going to be in the brig, and that's probably where I deserve to be.
A bridge full of people of a Korax-infested ship. I think the old man's forgetting what it's like to fly those ships.
I think that I keep making decisions which are well above my rank, Doctor.
I think this fleet needs people that make decisions. We do not have the capacity to make callbacks to people sitting on a bridge somewhere else. That's just my opinion. I lie back on the extremely hard bed in my paper pants.
Thanks, Doctor.
Take it or leave it.
Probably won't be up to me.
I think that's probably seen, is it?
I think so.
Because we're not going to have Catan come down and kick your ass right now. Obviously, Catan does do that.
No, I assume that he would do.
All right, let's end the scene with Catan marching up absolutely military precision style, sitting down and going, what the hell, Hellcat? And then just end the scene there.
I like the idea of Dr. Roy being present as a steady stream of senior officers come and chew me out.
Yeah. Well, I just scoff at them for their...
You're not helping, Dr. Roy. This is not helping. I'm not going to say that, but you're not helping.
I was vaguely thinking about that. I was reaching out, but it's probably too short.
I don't think it matters. Don't bother rolling the dice, my friend, because you and I are well beyond the hope of a reach-out move at this point.
Yeah, correct.
The only thing that can save us is a breaking point. You can't do a reach-out move at this point. There's no point.
Oh, really?
Because it's not going to reduce your stress. The only thing that will reduce your stress right now is a breaking point.
I get an XP.
Yeah.
It does increase your relationship too, right, if you roll high enough.
That's a very good point.
Okay. I feel like we've been through enough that our relationship is kind of... the whole point of that was me... backing you up, right? I'm going to back you up.
I think, yeah. I know, I appreciate that.
I feel like that points at a few breaking point actions, potentially.
Oh, I can tell you the breaking point action that is right in the back of my mind.
Yeah, I mean, it could have really kicked off there, but I bit my tongue, so.
Do you want to roll to reach out?
Do it.
Yeah, I feel like I want to roll a dice, so let's do it.
Can I roll to support that?
Guess so. I feel like...
Because if I do, I'll get an XP. Oh, Josh, I've picked up a -1 forward from the last action that I took. Is that still in place now that we've come back?
Yeah, because you're basically shaken.
So I'm going to roll -1 on my support.
Okay.
Oh, 10. I assume my warm is 0.
It could be -1 for all I know.
zero. No, my hard is minus one, which...
All right. So that's 10, provided Hellcat didn't mess it up for you.
I rolled a 3.
She messed it up for you. How funny.
Sorry, mate. But we get the XP regardless, don't we?
You get the XP for rolling.
Yeah, so it's fine. It just means...
So it's fine.
Yeah, we neither of us can erase our pressure, so it doesn't matter.
Well,
and either way, you increase.
Hang on a minute, you've just rolled a 3, so.
So I rolled a 3. On a support action, though, Josh. Not like main narrative.
What happens on a? What happens on a?
Yeah, the reach out worked.
Yeah.
Just despite Loris's best efforts.
Maybe you explode. Maybe that's what happens because you know you've already reached breaking point. I can't give you any pressure.
No. Systematically, you can't give me any pressure, and you wrote it that way, so you can't make me explode, because that's not rules as written.
I'm pretty sure I can.
Yeah, so there's a GM move in there.
I forgot about the GM move.
Player explodes.
Is that physically explode, or just emotionally?
I was going for physically.
Like Big Trouble in Little China.
I think like a red weed bursts out from inside my body, like alien style.
That's what the tent is for, isn't it? It's for when people explode.
Yeah.
Oh, that was good playing with you, Becky. Thanks for that.
Yeah, it's all right, mate.
Can somebody get some shower items on me? I've just had somebody explode.
You need some fresh paper pants.
Paper pants are wrecked.
I'm going to say, because I don't think it would be appropriate to have anybody explode or similar in this situation, I'm going to say that you both take minus one forward as the conversation leaves you oddly unsatisfied and slightly, you know, you realise that all of the things you were saying about you did the right thing and all of that actually doesn't matter what you say because you've undermined the commander.
Captain.
Captain Commander, this is confusing. And you've potentially contaminated the ship. So both of you take minus one forward and nevertheless, you get 7 to. I guess you still get the 10+, right?
Yeah, so we get plus one XP. I get one XP for reaching out,
and your relationship goes bump.
And we go, yeah. So I've put liability, a bit well meaning, in my little notes.
No, that's not me. That's Sonya Vega. I'm out of control.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's changed.
Maybe that's changing.
Yeah, you can rewrite that. So both of you now have relationship level 2 with each other, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that lovely scene. Shall we shift the action to the post-mission going out on the lash, as I'm assuming it will be, with Vega and Loris?
Yes. I'm not brigged.
Yet.
You have a reprieve.
Yes, I'm going to go out with Vega. Have I been told, like, not to tell Vega stuff?
About the
Does
mission?
That matter?
About anything.
I mean, like...
I feel like, actually, I'm enough trouble and I have kind of screwed up enough so that I won't be exceptionally loose-lipped right now.
Well, what you can do is roll some dice and find out whether you turn out to be loose-lipped. Because there is a move for this.
I'd rather not, because I'm at a breaking point. I'm on a minus one and I feel like I've got enough banked in terms of drama right now.
That's a good point. You're going to get... Yeah, fine.
I don't want to dilute that drama by doing this, but I do want to have a nice scene with my friend.
So are you... You're going out to hang out somewhere, is that? Like, in socialise?
Yeah.
So where is the place where Vega and Loris like to do that kind of thing?
It's just called Spanners.
Spanners. Is it run by somebody called Spanner, or...?
I think it's just got a, like, a big... Spanner, like, on over the entrance, instead of a name, it's just got...
Yeah, that. And it's where flight deck mechanics and flight deck pilots go to hang out.
All right, cool. I think that it is run by an engineer, though. I think that's why it's called Spanners.
Yeah. So, I'm Vega. I'm going to take you out for an amazing night, the best night you're going to get on the ship. We're going to Spanners.
Spanners? It's been a while. Wow. Well, first round's on me, I think.
Oh, gosh, I really need a drink right now. So, yeah, please.
Okay, so Vega grabs a couple of murky-looking glasses of something. It comes back to the table. So, I heard debrief didn't go brilliantly.
I think that debrief probably went as well as I could have expected, given the circumstances. I just can't start getting myself into trouble, Vega. I don't even have you to pull me out of it this time.
Really that bad?
Yeah, it might be.
But I thought Buckley kind of, you know, you were kind of his favourite.
I think there might be limits to that, and I might have just found them. You know what I'm like, Vega.
Well, I mean, it couldn't have gone that badly. I mean, you two were looking, if you don't mind me saying, pretty cosy before you left.
Hey. I
Come on, what's going on there?
If anything was going to go on there, then I think I just torpedoed it, so. Anyway, tell me about your latest gig. You're doing a story on Roy, no. Right?
No, we're not done on this. I'm sorry. I smell something. I've got to know. Like, isn't that kind of against the rules or whatever?
You're not going to write about any of this shit.
Oh, cool.
Like,
come on.
Mm.
Not with you.
Right. Well, there's nothing going on. Not really. You know, if I had a chance to... See, the thing about the situation we're in now, you can't transfer onto another ship. You can't leave the service. You're just stuck. You can't change who you are or what you do or who you're going to be until you get taken out by the Korax. This is kind of it now, isn't it? I can't retire and go off and run a bar.
If you're lucky, you might. If everything works out really, really, really well.
It's going to have to be really well. Like, where are we even running to at this point? We can't outrun the Korax forever. We'll run out of fuel.
Well, then maybe this is for the best. Like, I don't want to see you put your life on hold for something that has a 1% chance of happening. Like, you could die tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I think you're right, Josh. I think I am hitting the trigger for reaching out, but oh shit, man, I don't want to roll that again because I am going to balls it up with my -1, but I guess I have to.
At least there's a potential benefit here for somebody's pressure because Vega can actually benefit from it.
So did you say that for spending pressure, you also get XP? Because I'm sure I have spent...
Yeah, so as remarked a session or two back, the way you get XP is by rolling cardinal moves, and cardinal moves are the ones with the asterisk next to them. The ones which are on the basic move sheet are reach out, let loose, support and interfere, wait helplessly, and raise the pressure. So the one where you mark pressure to get bonuses is raise the pressure. You only get it for using the move, not for, like, if you mark pressure 3 times on one roll, that's one use of raise the pressure.
Right. I'm not sure how. I know I've raised the pressure once, so I'm going to take an XP for that, because that's why my pressure's maxed out.
Yeah.
Partially it's also some bad decisions on my part.
Yeah.
Or good decisions. Anyway, let me roll to reach out. -1. Woohoo!
Yay.
For the listeners, I just rolled 2 sixes, so even with a -1, I hit 11. Oh my gosh.
Okay, so
amazing.
Just as we should have done for the previous roll, let's actually look at what the actual trigger is. The trigger is you have to share a significant doubt or fear, hope or dream, failure or regret, or share your feelings about them, which you were doing just then. And the move only triggers if the person you're talking to responds positively, which, of course, Vega was. So, on a 10+, you each erase 1 pressure.
Except I don't.
Except you don't, because you have hit breaking point. But you increase your relationship with each other by 1.
Yeah.
So, that's great news, as long as both of you stay alive.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a liability there, I suppose. Anyway, thank you for interrupting me to tell me to roll some dice. I've now completely forgotten the thread of our narrative conversation.
That's what I do, apparently.
Look, you've got one life. We could all die tomorrow. And you doubly so, actually, with the shit that you're pulling out there. So, you know, there's a ton of people on this ship who are available. I say we get a ton of drinks inside us, and then you find someone and you have a good time and you forget about the captain.
You're on. This time tomorrow, I could be in the brig. So, Spanners, two more drinks, please.
I think in the background, by the way, we see Catan, who probably glances at you as he walks past and is at one of the gambling tables.
Well, I plan to do exactly what Vega has suggested. I'm going to have some. I'm not going to get completely drunk. I'm just going to have a couple of drinks to take the edge off. And then I'm going to go and find someone. And that's going to be my breaking point action, by the way. This is going to be, I'm going to fulfill my short-term desires or whims.
Hang on. What's the exact wording of that?
I just said it.
That's the whole thing?
It says, fulfill your short-term desires or whims, trampling over someone else in the process.
Yes, exactly. So I think in order to do that, logically, there's only one person who you can trample over in this situation.
Yes, that's right.
So you're going to have to do it in such a way that...
He finds out.
He finds out.
Yes.
Strongly suspect that's going to trigger my breaking point action too.
Yay! So I am going to go... I'm going to go and knock on Dr. Roy's door for a booty call. And I'm going to go and do it in a way that word gets... I'm not deliberately doing it in a way that word gets back to the captain, but word will get back to the captain. I'm not being subtle. Sorry, was that not what you were expecting me to do? Because that is 100% what I was going to do.
It's a bit surprising.
Yes, so let's say... Why don't we say that somebody is nearby when that happens? Like one of the bridge staff who would be able to report back.
Assuming that's okay with you, Ed.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm surprised by the visit, but I'm also not surprised. I mean,
you shouldn't have reached out, should you, when we were both wearing our paper underwear?
See, this is why I don't reach out.
Right, now that she's seen you in your paper underwear, it was
well, as I say, I am an avid, practitioner of calisthenics, so, you know, I'm pretty ripped. It maybe doesn't come across when I'm in my lab uniform, but, you know, in my paper
pants. But I've seen you in paper pants. And
maybe that's always the turning point. As soon as he's in the paper pants, everyone sees him in a different light.
Doctor, I thought that you were just a boffin.
Yes.
So that's my plan, is that if Ed's okay with it, I'm going to hit up the doctor for a booty call in a way, carelessly, such that out of character, so that a word will get back.
Cool. So we got a veil over sexy times, but...
Yeah, we do.
I figure we should at least get, like, a description of how that goes down in terms of, is it...
That doesn't sound like you're veiling it at all. That sounds like the opposite.
I think you should just describe a scene of you having mad rampant sex, please. No, I just mean, like, the bit before.
Okay, well, I am going to bid goodnight to Vega and say, you're right, and I'm gonna do it tonight. Because I could be in the brig tomorrow. So sink another one for me and walk yourself home.
And then do we see you at...
Then you see me walk to Dr. Roy's door. Because Dr. Roy's like got proper, bunks on his own as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's one of the few people who you could potentially have a booty call with and not get caught.
Could, but won't.
But won't.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to knock on his door.
Okay, so I stopped doing calisthenics. So I'm all glisteny, obviously, mid calisthenics. Put my dressing gown on, sip some what might be gin, might be water, has a slice of lime in it, and answer the door. And say, well, this is a surprise. How can I help you?
A good friend of mine has told me that I shouldn't spend a lot of time waiting and wishing things were different. That there was a ship full of people that I could be spending my time with, and I want to spend it with you right now.
You've been drinking. Are you sure this is wise? As I open the door slightly more.
I've had a couple of beers down at Spanner's. I'm not drunk. If you want to see how much pilots can drink, then you should come out with us tomorrow night.
That's tomorrow night. What about tonight?
I'm busy tonight. And so are you.
Are you going to go for the lunge, the full-on lunge at that point?
No, I'm not. I'm going to walk in, and I'm hoping that somebody sees me walk into your room.
Okay, yeah. So I open the door like a bit more.
With you in a dressing gown.
Yeah, you step in, and I'll shut the door. Right.
Yeah, yeah, and I think we see, as the door closes, we see one of the bridge staff, who will get a name, watching with a raised eyebrow.
If you're cool with that, Ed, of course. I don't want to kind of bounce you and your character into a ill-advised decision.
I opened the door, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Thanks for listening. We've been playing Last Fleet by me, Josh Fox. You can find links to Last Fleet and all of the rest of our stuff in the show notes. And don't forget that Becky's game Wreck This Deck is currently crowdfunding on BackerKit, and there's a link to that in the show notes also. See you next time.
Becky, have you got new glasses, or have I just been completely unobservant for the last million years?
I have got new glasses.
Shh.
Poo, poo, poo. Nobody at work has noticed, and I've been on Zoom calls with them for 2 days.
I thought on the promo vid, hang on a minute, those are new glasses.
I wear new glasses.
He's wearing a new glasses special, like.
I'm not sure what I think about them. They feel like they make my eyes look really small. I can't understand why that would be the case when my other ones didn't.
I don't know.
I sort of like them, I'm not really sure yet.
Well, I've gone back to my round ones. I bought the round ones and everyone called me Harry Potter for ages.
No,
and then
I think the round ones suit you.
Oh, okay, thanks.
I think they look good.
I don't know whether school kids taunting me by calling me Harry Potter is... I can cope with it.
How
on the streets.
Old are you?
Rougher than Avon.
Are they even still reading Harry Potter, the school kids of today? Rafi doesn't give two shits about Harry Potter. He thinks it's...
Hooray!
Really, yeah, he's not interested at all.
Only because we've banged on about how rubbish it is.
No, he stopped reading well before then. He hasn't even finished the series. He just thinks they're boring compared to...
Oh, they're so boring. I'm so glad everyone's finally caught up with this, because I've not liked them since forever. So
yeah,
I've just half-assed
being like, I don't
copycats
get
of other things that are much, much better. But there we go.
What I want to know is if Sue just feels horribly left out every time we talk about glasses.
She's got glasses. She's got mega specs. She's got two different pairs of glasses because she didn't want to upset either contingent.
Are you wearing contacts right now?
No, I only wear glasses. I rarely wear glasses, so I'm a bit short-sighted. So most of the time it's fine, but like cinema, telly, sometimes out and about if I'm feeling, you know, spicy.
Do you wear them at movie night, and we don't know?
Yeah.
Pictures, or it didn't happen.
I'm going to start taking a photo of myself just before movie
yeah,
night.
Yeah, pre-movie night photos would be
yeah,
a new thing,
night.
Right?
Exactly.
So, to show your snacks.
I wore them out to a gig on Monday night, and it was just being in the bar with, you know, sharp, in-focus faces was very upsetting, actually. I think I want to go back to soft focus.
Yeah,
because if you don't wear them very often, like, it must be like the first time when you have to put on new glasses after a visit to the opticians, which is always a bit painful because the world just feels a bit too sharp.
Yeah, it's just a bit raw, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I should probably wear them all the time.
I've started to cut down on my glasses wearing, actually. I've been cutting down. So I used to just wear them all the time. I don't need to. And then I went on a go-karting trip with work and was wearing them and themed up. And I'm like, I don't even need to be wearing these things. I'm losing. Otherwise, I'd be winning this race.
I still remember my first pair when I didn't get glasses until I was like 24 or something.
Oh, my life.
And I genuinely didn't realize that people could see that far in the distance.
Yeah, I had the same experience when I was 18.
Wow.
I was looking out the window of my then bedsit. And was like, oh, you know, there's fog. And my girlfriend at the time was like, no, there isn't.
God.
Isn't that a bit worrying?
I don't have any of those experiences because I got glasses when I was six for the first time, and I have no memory of life before lenses.
Life before lenses.
She couldn't see anything.
I couldn't see anything.
Yeah. Well, Becky's like, basically, you know, I don't know, what's the animal that can't see other than the bat? You know, bats are the obvious one to go for. Yeah, you're like a mole. That's right.
A mole.
Calling you a little devil.
I'm very bad. I have a special voucher from the government to help towards my glasses because I have what is called a complex prescription.
Oh. Like, are they interesting shaped lenses?
No, they're not interesting at all. What that means is that I'm incredibly, incredibly, incredibly short-sighted, and I have astigmatisms in both eyes, which means that my eyeballs are the wrong shape.
What right. actually is an astigmatism?
It means that your eyeballs are rugby ball shaped instead of round.
It's, you can think of it as the next order of distortion, right? Like if you're compressing this way or this way, then that way is astigmatism. I went to this amazing talk by an optics researcher who had developed a technique for producing lenses that could correct like something ridiculous, like up to 20th order distortions in the shape of your eyes. So we do one and two, first and second order. So they could take any eyeball and make its vision perfect out to like 20th order.
But I would like for that to happen now.
I don't understand what you mean by 20th order. That and your hand gestures did not help and will not have helped anyone listening either because they can't see them, but suffice to say it was just like he was waving his hands around like a seal.
Imagine that my eye is distorted in time and space in another dimension.
I don't know, it sounds complicated, almost as complicated as Becky's prescription for her glasses.
So they can be squashed front to back, top to bottom, side to side, right? I get that.
Yeah, so
and diagonally.
Well, diagonally would just be top to bottom and side to side at the same time, surely. Or would it?
I mean, to some extent, yes, I guess. But the thing about the 20th order is that you can keep adding layers of distortions. So your lenses would have texture, essentially.
They'd be bumpy.
Yeah, but a type of bumpy that is perfect for the shape of your specific
Wouldn't you need to
eyes.
Hold your glasses in an incredibly specific position?
I mean, I think this was part of the trick, right? Was that? I mean, I didn't entirely understand this what he was doing, but I think no. I think he could make usable glasses that didn't require you to hold your head perfectly still.
Yeah.
Mental. I love it.
Incredibly expensive. Completely non-commercial. So,
can he do it in contact lenses is the question.
Or implants.
Bionics, that's the future.
Bionic eyes. Yeah, if I take my glasses off, though, I basically just can't see anything. I see vague blurs, outlines, and colour, and I can't recognise people. And I'm going long-sighted as well now, which is a particularly interesting experience.
Your glasses will be a really funny shape if you go long and short-sighted to
that
degree.
Varifocals, but I don't need varifocals yet because the power of my short-sighted lenses is so strong that just by adjusting them up and down my nose very slightly, I can change. So what I have agreed with my optician is that it's no point getting varifocals because if I just do this, it corrects my nearsightedness for as long as I need it to be corrected, and then I just push them back up onto my nose again and look up.
But when you eventually do, like, will one half of them be like a foot thick because of your incredible short-sightedness, and the other half be really thin because you're only just a little bit long-sighted?
Like two ski slopes.
I don't even know. I don't even know how that's going to work for me, whether I'll end up getting two pairs of glasses or...
We're all getting old. I feel like I might be getting long-sighted. I've noticed it's getting harder to read.
Well, I was told because of my extreme short-sightedness that I would get long-sighted much earlier life. Yeah, there are no upsides.
I think you could rock the double pairs of glasses like the clock expert on Repair Shop.
Yeah, I could, couldn't I?
Yeah.
That would be cool. But I want them to be like...
steampunk maestro.
Tiny,
with little lenses
tiny
that you flip
steampunk.
In and out.
Like in Sleepy Hollow. The
Ichabod
Crane has the funny little glasses. That's what I need.
I still think pausing to just perfectly adjust your glasses on your nose is a bit of a power move. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely it is.
Yeah, everyone's got to wait.
Yeah, anything that makes other people wait is, yeah. That and talking quietly so other people have to sort of lean forward.
I'm not sure I understand why they would be waiting.
Which is what all short people do to me.
So that Becky can see whatever she's supposed to be reading or writing on or signing or...
Oh, I see. So it's like at the beginning of the talk, she stands up at the front and then adjusts and everyone's got just like a half second longer to wait.
Or like a police interview or something. An interrogation. Just let them stew a little bit.
Wait, did Becky do the crimes? Or
Becky's the investigator.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I assumed it's the other way around. I assumed that I was doing a power move as someone who'd been arrested by the police.
Could go either way with that.
They go, where were you on the night of the 17th? And you go,
yeah.
I'll just clear my throat. Now I shall adjust my glasses. Now I just need to twiddle with my bow tie.
I feel like I'm more likely to be arrested than I am to become a police officer.
Well, there's too many fiddly things before saying something, and then you start to look nervous. If you do like one distinct, concise act that takes time,
it takes a really long time. You just adjust your glasses.
Whereas if you do like Laurel and Hardy, you know, you're going to look a bit. They're not going to take you seriously.
You sit slowly with like a look of disdain on your face.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
That's what I'll try and cultivate.
If you're the investigator, you need to look steely-eyed at them, directly in the eye, while you're cleaning your glasses.
That's really problematic, because when I'm cleaning my glasses, I can't see people's eyes. Like earlier on today, I took my glasses off for something, and Josh was talking to me, and I was desperately trying to guess where in his face his eyes were, so it looked like I was making eye contact. Did it work, Josh?
I don't remember this situation.
Okay,
at all.
Top tip. If you ever become like a criminal investigator and you're in a situation that's a tense interview, keep your glasses on, sit down, get your eyes in frame, steely-eyed, take them off, remain steely-eyed, clean the glasses, put them back on again.
Or you could just come in with the glasses off and be continually looking past somebody's shoulder and have them be all... What?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know.
Is there something behind me?
That's a significant issue because, do you know, in new passport control, they do the facial recognition thing?
Oh, yeah. I hate those things.
And you know you can't wear glasses for it to work. Well, I can't get it to work because I can't focus on where they want me to look because I can't see it. It won't recognize my face when I've got my glasses off, and it won't recognize it with my glasses on.
So it assesses where the focus point is and everything. Your eyes have got to be in a specific position.
You're going to be trapped in the airport, unable to leave.
Yeah.
When they finally just get rid of all staff.
Yep.
The AI is just like, you are not a real person.
You're going to be the new guy from that Tom Hanks film.
Yeah, I am. I'm going to be stuck in the airport.
Make sure you pick a good airport.
Forever.
I'm not sure I'd have picked Charles de Gaulle myself, but